Welcome, folks, to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Every week, diving deep into the truth of Catholic social teaching and restoring all things in Christ.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Dr. Bud Maher.
We are coming to you live from various places in the United States. I'm here in Des Moines, Iowa, at the Mercy One studio. I do lots of things here in Des Moines, Iowa, but specifically you might run into me directing things. I'm the Director of Mission and Ministry at Mercy College of Health Sciences and the Director of the Zeta Institute for Foundation and Ethics and Leadership. You can find both of those at mchs.edu and zetainstitute.com. Bud, out in Pennsylvania, although I'm not dead sure that you're in that location now, what do you do in Pittsburgh and what are you up to now on the phone?
I'm the director of the National Institute for Newman Studies, and you can find more about the work we're doing at newmanstudies.org. I'm on my cell phone, but I'm going to make a confession to our audience. I'm a little under the weather today.
Oh. So.
But I had that. Remember when we were kids and the Bulls were playing the Jazz or the Suns or someone and Jordan got sick in the finals?
Right.
And I had that image, so I'm stumbling onto the radio program. I don't think I can pass my germs via the airwaves.
That's true. Science checks out, because we're talking about science today. The science checks out on that claim, A. But B, the bolder claim is you're going to say this is your flu game, like the Jordan flu game.
Or the listeners might hear me hurling in the background.
<That's>
no, right. I think, I know some of the mothers on listening might be thinking that he needs to be in bed. He needs to be in bed.
Well, I don't. It's 11 o'clock where you're at. Get up, man. No, I'm kidding. Well, Bud, we all hope you feel better, and we're also very appreciative that to show you how hardworking the on-air talent here at Iowa Catholic Radio is Bud, in the midst of feeling under the weather, is still on air. So we appreciate your presence here, Bud.
Well, yeah, I don't want to spoil the surprise, but I couldn't miss our guests for the day either.
There's
that, too.
It's going to be great. So our guest today is Dr. Chris Bagwell, who is the director of the Science Initiative for the McGrath Institute of Church Life at Notre Dame University. He's going to be a great interview. But as always, Bagwell, because I keep thinking of baseball. Excuse me. Chris Bagwell. We're having a really 90s sports introduction right now, so sorry for everybody who's under 25 and has no clue who we keep referring to. Yes, Chris Bagwell, excuse me. But as always, it's brought to you by Mercy College of Health Sciences, who underwrites our show. We're in the middle of the summer. People are getting back from July 4th. And, Bud, really for the summer semester, they're gearing up to do the last home stretch, getting in midterms, getting in midterm grades, I know people have been doing, and just generally working hard so that a lot of people who have done the graduation ceremonies in April will officially be done with all of their work. And so soon in April and September, we'll be unleashed into the world to help people throughout the community with all of their healthcare needs.
Yeah, whenever you're a little under the weather, you're always, my mind goes to Mercy College, and just when you're sick, how important it is to have someone compassionate there who's treating not only the body, but all of your needs, emotional and spiritual. So we're grateful for Mercy College for supporting our show.
Yeah, and I think that we've just had conversations today, yesterday I should say, a meeting talking exactly about that. What does it mean to imbibe the heritage of the Sisters of Mercy and how they do not only nurse care but health care in general, and wonderful people to get to work with talking about such these things. But exactly what you're talking about, that if we're talking about holistic care, it's not only health and, you know, the actual body and making sure that it gets back up to speed. Also, of course, mental health, which everybody's talking about in the news and it makes sense, but also holistically spiritual health as well, and how the whole human is wrapped together in that sort of environment to improve and become better. And, you know, with you, you know, sick on the line, it's a good reason to talk about people who heal people. And Mercy College of Health Sciences helps people do that. So mchs.edu.
Well, should we transition to the guest and theme for the show?
Yeah. So when it comes to exactly this sort of thing, right? Like, science often gets cordoned off. Well, it's actually the opposite way around. A lot of people assume science is the obvious thing. So if you're going to talk about faith, it's always either as an extra, it's like, icing on top of the cake, or it's something private and something you do off by yourself. However, not only do we have to look at the entire history of science to see how interlaced faith and the people of faith, and especially the church, have been in making that sort of scientific understanding and the advances that we've made possible, but it also goes to show you what does it mean to have a scientific worldview, and how is that influenced by the fact that it arose in a civilization that believed in a creator, that believed that study was important, that believed that nature itself was a gift. And so Chris does incredible work. He's actually helped people who are doing things here in Des Moines, all over the nation. So it's going to be interesting to talk about how this dialogue not only is important for the good work it does in and of itself, but what it does for the sake of the common good, how we try to point out even something like the faith and science dialogue has intimate repercussions for talking about the common good.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I would encourage our listeners to stay with us for the show, but if you have the time to dig deeper into the subject, in the popular common culture, you get the sense sometimes that the church has always had its head in the sand on these matters, and really the dialogue between theologians and Christian thinkers and scientists has some fascinating history to it, so I'm excited for Chris to get into some of that.
Yep, so as we said, that's Dr. Chris Baglow, Director of the Science and Religion Initiative at the McGrath Institute at Notre Dame. We will be talking to him right after these messages. But if people want to ask questions of you, myself, or Dr. Baglow, or if they want to, you know, wish you to get better, they can do so at the ZipWhip line. 515-223-1150. That's 515-223-1150, the ZipWhip line. Just do hashtag UCG for the uncommon good, and we'll make sure to look at what you're talking about. We can read it on air. If you want it to be anonymous, of course, you can let us know. But we've had wonderful suggestions. We've had people give us great notes, great critiques, great feedback. It's wonderful to get to hear from people out there. So please, even if you want to ask a question that's later, you maybe hear the rebroadcast, you hear this on a podcast, no big deal at all. The ZipWhip line. 515-223-1150, 515-223-1150. This is the Uncommon Good, and we'll be back after this break.
50 years ago, tuition and costs at Catholic elementary schools were mostly absorbed by parishes. Now, higher salaries for lay teachers and new technologies have greatly increased the cost for families. Hi, I'm Jean Wells at the Catholic Tuition Organization, and my job is to reduce tuition costs for families and award great tax credits to generous donors. Want to help? Please donate today at ctoiowa.org. Let's do this for the kids and their future.
Thank you, Blessed International, for their support of Iowa Catholic Radio. Everyone lives their life 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. How we use that time directly affects if our life will leave a significant impact or not. Each year, Blessed International leads Central Iowans on a 12-day, all-inclusive experience sharing the heart of Christ with children in South Africa. Teams are forming to do something significant in an African child's life. Learn more at blessedinternational.org. That's blessedinternational.org.
Hey friends, John Leonetti here. Big thanks to R&R Realty Group for underwriting my show and for their support of Iowa Catholic Radio. R&R Realty Group Sierra Point Apartments are located in West Des Moines. Think granite tops, oversized windows, 24-hour health center, and heated underground parking. R&R Realty Group is locally owned by a Catholic family, a great blessing to Iowa Catholic Radio. RRRealty.com. That's RRRealty.com.
Thank you, Pekin Insurance, for your support of the Dowling Catholic Boys Baseball broadcast. Confused about insurance? Pekin Insurance, provided by Rob McCarger at LaGoria Insurance Agency in Des Moines, can help you find affordable auto, home, business, or life insurance coverage. Pekin Insurance provides beyond the expected services and coverage. LaGoria Insurance Agency, 4320 and a half Southwest 9th Street, Des Moines, Iowa, 515-285-0370, or online at lagoria-insurance.com.
Back with the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher coming to you this Wednesday here on Iowa Catholic Radio. And thank you for listening. Folks, today we have with us Dr. Chris Baglow, Director of Science of the Science and Religious Initiative for the McGrath Institute for Church Life at the University of Notre Dame. Chris, thank you for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, Bo.
Now, I've already messed up your name. I called you Chris Bagwell because I was thinking of Jeff Bagwell. So if I pull off misnaming you after other former Houston Astros, please correct me. Bud has already helped me out once.
Good deal.
Yeah, so Chris, this is fantastic work. I got the great privilege to run into you guys in your element at University of Notre Dame, talking to people exactly about this initiative, Science and Religion. We have people in Des Moines themselves who've gone to observe your work, have benefit from it. So just, I guess, in a real quick way, if you don't mind introducing our readers, what is it that the Science and Religion Initiative mostly does on any given day?
Okay, so the Science and Religion Initiative exists to help Catholic educators, especially science and religion teachers, but also administrators and all of their colleagues, to kind of reach within science and religion education the Church's vision for Catholic education, which is a synthesis of faith and culture reached by integrating all of human knowledge through the subjects taught in the light of the gospel. So that's what the program is about. So we work with teachers in week-long seminars in the summertime. We go out and do what we call institute days, day-long events in dioceses all over the country. We do them at large catechetical conferences and that kind of thing. That's what we do on a daily basis.
And like I said, actually, when I was out there, you know, it's funny how you can travel around the world and then you meet people back from where you're from. Des Moines' own Elizabeth Schief, who's out at Dowling, she actually gave a presentation at what the week-long event you guys had, pointing out ways in which, even here at Des Moines, your work is already bearing fruit, exactly trying to talk about the dialogue between faith and reason. Now, if I can ask you, what set you off down this path? People might not know your biography, but reading it, I know that you didn't start out necessarily primarily talking about science and faith and how they interact. What set you on this path to see that this was a need that the Church had, that you wanted to answer that sort of call?
Oh, gee. Well, anyway, I'm a theologian, and so and I'm a native New Orleanian. I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana. And I was blessed to be able not only to get my PhD, but also to go back to New Orleans and serve, the church where I, in the place that I love and the community that I love. But in 2005, Hurricane Katrina kind of put a halt to that. I was a professor and the chair of the theology department at Our Lady of Holy Cross College in New Orleans when Katrina hit in August of 2005. And it shut down the college, it flooded my house, and sent me and my family into refugee status in central Louisiana. And it was then that I got a phone call from a priest who's president of McGill-Tulin Catholic High School, still to this day, in Mobile, Alabama. And a friend had given him my name as somebody who might be interested in this project that he had thought up, which was a curriculum on the relationship between faith and science to complement their new Master Science Center that they were building. So they were in the process of building the center, and he was concerned that a better science program not leave behind catechesis, that the new science program would raise questions, and that the catechesis, you know, at the school, the theology, the religion department, should be able to offer students something that helped them reflect on what they were learning in science theologically. I was not at all qualified for that job. I was a scholar of the theology of St. Thomas Aquinas, and my main area was the theology of the Church, in his thought, and basically was teaching your bread-and-butter theology courses, you know, foundations of Catholicism and Christology and ecclesiology. So I hadn't done much work in this at all. I kind of knew a little, but not much. But the rumor on the street was that the college was not going to open again. It did, fortunately. So I'm sitting out there twiddling my thumbs in central Louisiana, wondering about how I'm going to get my house renovated and torn out and all of that. And this call comes, and I was like, you know, this may be God filling my time as I wait to see what I will do next after the storm. And that's what got me started.
Oh, man, that's a fantastic story. It's crazy how hurricanes and floods and everything like that can come together to plan out your life for almost 15 years after that.
Yeah, I know Des Moines folks are not at all unfamiliar with floods.
That's right.
So, yeah, so even 9 inches, which is what our house got, was enough to keep us out of it for a year. So I started the only quiet place I could find, because rebuilding began in earnest, basically, in the whole area. And the only place that I could find to do my research was the Adoration Chapel at St. Catherine of Siena Parish on Bonneville Boulevard in Metairie, which is where I was born and raised. And so I would go there every day to read and to write. And I would just pray and read and write and pray and read and write. And ultimately that became a textbook, which was published in 2009 by Midwest Theological Forum, called Faith, Science, and Reason, Theology on the Cutting Edge.
Chris, I know that in teaching undergraduates, young adults will reject the faith for different reasons. But one thing you do come across, especially sometimes with thoughtful students, is they feel like scientific discovery has made God sort of unnecessary.
Yeah.
I was reading an article, a little blog post that you had online, and you were talking about naturalism, the idea that mm-hmm. the regularity of phenomena as inhering in the natures of things and in the nature of the whole. And you point out that sometimes we associate that with modern discovery, but this goes all the way back to Greek philosophers. And what jumped out to me about your article was you say, like, there have been some great thinkers, for instance, St. Augustine, who wrestled with this idea, but found it no reason to, you know, reject or fail to trust in God. And the line that you say is that because the integrity of the natural world is a doctrine of the Catholic Church. And that phrase jumped out to me. Could you talk to our listeners about, when we think doctrine, a lot of times we think about the sacraments and spirituality, mm-hmm. purgatory, things like that. How is the integrity of the natural world a teaching that the Church adheres to?
Yeah, so that is surprising, and it was surprising to me when I first started doing my research on this, but I kept coming back to it again and again and again. And it's essentially just a logical necessity based on what we believe about God as creator, right? So if God is perfectly wise and loving, right, he can create a world that does what he wishes it to do, right? He doesn't need to constantly be intervening to push this button or that button, you know what I mean, to fix the world that he mm-hmm. has created. And so the fact that we find regular patterns and processes and laws of nature and all these kinds of things should be expected by those who believe that God created the universe through his perfect word, who is also his son. And so there's a nice passage in the Catechism in a section on creation, and I don't have the numbers in my mind right now, that actually kind of lays out what I'm talking about here when we talk about the integrity of the natural world. So naturalism in the sense of not there's nothing but nature, which is kind of atheistic naturalism, but methodological naturalism, where scientists go out and they actually expect the world to make sense, right, and they expect to be able to find patterns and processes. That's not far from what we say when we say we believe in God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth.
Now, Chris, thinking about how your emerging call to go and talk to people about this came at the behest of a force of nature, Katrina, to me that starts to be... it's not an answer to atheistic naturalism, because, of course, it's not sort of some proof that necessarily they would see as proof. But I think that starts to be the delightful mystery of talking about the integrity of creation, is that if we don't need to, on one hand, believe, you know, that God, like, sticks his finger into the earth to make, you know, Hurricane Katrina happen, nor is it the fact that these are just dumb atoms that never end up making any sort of meaning in the world, but that what we're trying to get at is this golden mean between two extremes, to understand how it is that the integral order of creation is also the very thing that drives forth our discussions about meaning and why we're here and what my life means and what your life means and what all of our life means together. As someone who's more humanities background, to hear the presentations that everybody gave, it seems to me that we're not going to be able to have discussions like the importance of literature or philosophy or theology unless we regain this idea that science not only belongs in those same sort of discussions, but provides a sort of table for which people can rest the what they're talking about in these other domains.
Sure, but you know, it's kind of like body surfing in the Gulf of Mexico. You know,
I knew that's where you were going.
That's good. That's right, which is a bad idea right now, apparently because of a cyanobacteria bloom. But I'm not down there. I'm in South Bend, Indiana.
Right, right.
So, but it's like you got to take the wave that comes to you. And right now, the strongest wave is science, which is the cutting edge of human knowledge in our day. It's amazing what scientists are discovering about everything from biological life to the origins of humanity. I mean, we found five new Homo species, the fossils of five new Homo species, or they have, rather, over just the past decade. That we can't just ignore that. You know what I mean? For me, it was a stretch because I'm a humanities guy, too. You know what I mean? I'd rather be reading a good novel than reading a science paper. But as I started reading those papers and started learning about it, I began to realize, you know, there's a lot for theological reflection here. There's a lot that's being provided to us that we can think about and reflect on and give us a new opportunity to proclaim the perennial truth that God has revealed in Christ. And so that's an opportunity that we can't pass up. It's not everyone's call, but it seemed to me that under the circumstances, God was calling me to it. So there you go.
That's right. It's been in a Job-like manner.
Right.
Well, and I think that that's interesting to talk about it that way when it comes to young people and especially how we present this to high schoolers, people in college. Because I think what we start to see is, A, you can have a very emaciated understanding of what science means. And essentially what they mean is, oh, well, we have iPhones and can fly in planes, you know science, which seems to sort of suck the wonder right out of science, which seems to be one of its most compelling parts if you know the story of a sort of scientific history. But then also that it's a paltry worldview, right? That to say that we have, mechanical, material, naturalistic explanations of things doesn't have to make, a French existentialist out of every 17-year-old who takes a biology class. But that sort of seems to be the sort of silly, shallow narrative that gets passed along too often.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we've inherited this very superficial. I don't think it. By the way, this is bad. That in itself, it's bad. But I do think that the way we've inherited it, this very superficial, mechanistic view of the universe, where the universe is a machine and we make machines in the universe to keep our lives running smoothly. And that takes away all of the awe and wonder that ought to be infused in the scientific process, that in fact has fueled the greatest discoveries in science and that still animates the lives of great scientists to this day. And that awe and wonder at beauty, at truth, right? That is something that is akin to spirituality, right? It's something that is close to the experience we have in prayer, and they should be kept close because otherwise science simply becomes a way for us to do stuff and make things. Not that that's bad, but that can't be the be-all and end-all of it.
So, Chris, when you're traveling or lecturing and talking to people of faith, I know I've met some Catholics who are not, you would say, like hostile to science, but they just haven't been sort of led down the path. Because there's different ways of thinking about the relationship between faith and reason, science and religion. How do you talk to Catholics about that? Like, we don't want to say that science and faith or theology are in a competitive relationship. Is it this idea that there's kind of like different spheres of knowledge or ways of reasoning? What kind of language do you begin to give people who come to hear your talks?
Well, I mean, I start out, and I quote this again and again and again, and I'm stealing it from both St. John Paul II and Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. Both of them use this language. Science takes things apart to show us how they work, and religion brings things together to show us what they mean, right? Science answers the how questions. Faith answers the why questions. And if you think about it, all of the doctrines we believe as Catholics, none of them give us how explanations, right? So consecration, well, we know that, right? The bread and wine become the body and blood, soul and divinity of Christ. We don't know how. There is no answer to how, right? We know that God holds all things in being. Is there a process by which God holds all things in being? No. There's no way we can think about it because God is eternal. Time does not apply to God, and how processes require time, right? And to continue to make those kinds of distinctions again and again and again. In the second edition of the textbook, which will be coming out at the end of this year, I give two examples in the very first chapter of this how-why distinction. Two great human beings, one of them, Friedrich Miescher, the 19th century discoverer of DNA, the chemical nuclein, he called it, which turned out to be DNA, and the how processes by which he found that, which were painstaking and probably cost him his life, and Ignatius of Loyola and his experience at Manresa, where he comes to have a whole new perspective on his life and on the world, a why perspective, right, which is something that gives us the widest wisdom about what it means to be a human being and to be alive and to die, right, and to love, etc.
I think when you run into students who've not had a lot of why questions, it starts to show something that I think in the second half of the show we'll need to get into precisely because it has some of the most direct questions about what does it mean, the science and faith dialogue for the common good. But it starts to go to what people, what sort of power people want to have. And this might sound like a sort of grab bag, but I think this goes in to say that if people want sort of technological power, or they want, you know, sort of monetary power, they want the ability to satisfy desires they have immediately, the why question almost gets in the way of all of this, right? So if you have a very consumer culture, and yeah, what you want to do is have the power to get what you want, why questions are just speed bumps along the way. But it seems to me that's one of the things you're precisely hoping to do, is it's not just, hey, let's get these kids to realize that you can like science and faith, but the sort of old philosophical hope of slowing them down with why questions. And if if the science ones are first, great, but that gets into making a slow their life down to have a more complete human life.
Yeah, and our third seminar this summer, which is the capstone seminar, we call it, and that's for alumni schools. So schools who in previous years have come through our foundations events, like the one, Bo, that you attended and the one that we do in New Orleans. The capstone event was on artificial intelligence, human consciousness, and human reason. And all of the presentations and all of the discussions came back around to the way in which we hide ourselves from the why questions, precisely by narcissistically taking up and consuming technology. It's very interesting. And how to change that into a marshaling of technology for human progress and for the sake of virtue and character formation, etc., is one of the great questions that we have to face as Christians in our day. So, yeah, I agree entirely. The why questions can become obscured. It's like Pope Benedict XVI said in his inaugural homily. He said the exterior deserts are growing because the interior deserts are so vast. Like, we've created a desert inside ourselves, and so we consume things in the world, we abuse the world, we abuse the environment, precisely because we feel empty. And it's facing squarely the why questions that begin to bring us to a place where we find meaning and satisfaction with life, and not just with this or that thing we have.
Well, I think this is fantastic. It's precisely where I knew that we would end up, is that it's not just a matter of filling in a gap in knowledge people often have about science or religion, but precisely why this dialogue is so fruitful. Chris, we're going to go to break, so if you'll stay with us and hang on, we'll be back right after. This is The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher will be back right after this.
Sounds good.
Folks, if you want to keep up with what's going on Iowa Catholic Radio, it's easy to do. All you have to go to do is Facebook and type in Iowa Catholic Radio. You can friend us and follow us. And then also go over to the Twitter page, and you can follow our tweet bird saying things at IA Catholic Radio, the original OG website, of course, iowacatholicradio.com, where you can go sign up for emails, look what's going on throughout the diocese and on air, donate if you feel so inclined, but also sign up for the email that's twice a month, not filling up your inbox, just letting you know, keeping abreast of what everything we're doing here at Iowa Catholic Radio. Again, there's supposedly the rumor of an Instagram. You can go follow it or not. You know, I think we're taking pictures of plates of cheese and other, you know, nice snack meats or whatever like that the kids like on Instagram. But for sure, you can go to Twitter and Facebook and the website. This is The Uncommon Good. We'll be back right after this.
When you donate to CTO, you're helping more and more families send their kids to Catholic school. That's great, because more and more families qualify for tuition assistance every year. Your generosity makes a huge difference for thousands of families and kids who really need help. Plus, your donation qualifies you for great tax credits. Want to help? Please donate at ctoiowa.org. Let's do this for the kids and their future.
Impoverished children break everyone's heart, but poverty seems like such a big problem. What can one person do to make a difference? For 17 years, Blessman International's passion has been to connect the resources of our donors with sustainable programs that impact the lives of impoverished children in South Africa. Our donors are feeding thousands of hungry children every week, providing basic water and sanitation for impoverished communities, and sharing the love of God in practical ways every day. Go to www.blessmaninternational.org and make your donation today.
Partial support for Catholic Women Now comes from injury attorney Fred Haas. When Iowans have been injured through no fault of their own in a car, truck, or motorcycle accident, harmed in a work-related injury, or suffered injury due to negligence of others, Fred Haas has been on their side to help recover from financial, physical, and emotional loss. Fred, double D, Haas, double A. Online at fredhaas.com. The Des Moines Law Offices of Fred Haas. While we have time, let us do good.
Thank you to Mercy One for their support of Iowa Catholic Radio. From the cardiovascular experts at the Iowa Heart Center to the pediatric services of Mercy Children's Hospital and Clinics, Mercy provides complete care for Central Iowa's adults and children with more than 50 primary care and specialty clinics in the Des Moines area. Find a convenient Mercy One location near you. Online at mercydesmoines.org.
Common Good, Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr joining you this Wednesday. We have on the show Dr. Chris Baglow, Director of the Science and Religion Initiative for the McGrath Institute for Church Life at the University of Notre Dame. Chris, thanks for joining us back on the show.
Good to be here.
So I'm going to mangle words you've said at you, and then you can correct me. Tell me what you actually said, because it was such a great way to point this out. But as people heard in the first part of the show, you've been doing this Science and Religion Initiative for a while, but actually your work has been in Thomas Aquinas, precisely his understanding of the church and things like this. Well, you pointed out from one of his commentaries that Thomas makes a distinction about two types of love, or why people are loved, out of what sort of source they're loved from. And one is out of justice, right? That there are people that we love because of what they've done for us, right? A child for their parents, you know, friends who have done things for each other. But then there's also out of mercy, when someone who is unequal, as it were, loves people out of pity, out of their own sake, whatever word that we want to use. And this, of course, is the love that God gives us. Out of mercy, he not only saved us, but he even created us, right? Because there's no justice. God didn't owe us creation. Now, you brought this up to really show the foundation of why studying creation is a way to get into understanding God's love for us. So hopefully I didn't mangle it too bad, but you can correct me, and if you don't mind expanding on this point.
Oh no, that was fantastic. So you nailed it essentially.
Good.
So I think justice. When I love out of justice, I love someone because I owe them love, right? So when I love my wife, I'm not being merciful. I'm being just, because my wife has a right to my love. I would say the same about my children, right? Mm-hmm. But what about when I forgive someone who has hurt me? Then I cause goodness where goodness is absent, and my love is gratuitous because I don't owe love in that situation, right? And it seems to me that this distinction, which Thomas Aquinas makes in his commentary on Ephesians, which is what I wrote my dissertation on, is a wonderful way to think about what we mean when we talk about creation out of love. Because creation out of nothing, right, means that we don't ever owe anything to nothing, right?
Right.
And if God is holding us in existence out of nothing at every moment, that's an act of mercy. Our very existence, our very lives, which can so often seem to us a burden and in tragic situations cause people to even ask, you know, why do I even live? Can actually remind us, no, God has mercy on you and gives you your existence precisely for that reason. And therefore you can count on his forgiveness, his love, his care, even in the worst situations. There's a wonderful passage in the work of Julian of Norwich in her Revelations of Divine Love, where the Holy Spirit shows her something, a little shimmering orb, puts it in her hand, and it's the size of a hazelnut. You can imagine how small, right? And she asks what it is, and the Holy Spirit tells her it's everything that exists. And she wonders how it could last, because it looks like it could perish at any moment. And the Spirit says it exists because God loves it, and everything has existence through the love of God. That's the heart of the Christian doctrine of creation. And with not much reflection, you can begin to see there why God would create a universe that develops freely through things like cosmic and biological evolution. Because love cherishes freedom. It's not oppressive. It's not coercive. Right? And why ultimately we have a universe that seems to be the product of a mind, when we look closely at it, and produces creatures with minds. Mm. That is us.
Right.
Yeah.
Chris, this whole question about God's relationship to the world, I think this is so vital. And to march some skeletons out of my closet, back in the day when I was wrestling with, like Calvinistic approaches to freedom and to God's will, it was really revolutionary and life-changing for me to read St. Thomas Aquinas, and he says, well, basically, in short, that God is not another object in the universe.
That's right.
God doesn't exist in a competitive relationship with God's creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps us untangle, I think, so many thorny theological questions. But I know, you know, someone like any one of the new atheists will say that idea is all fine and good. When you look at some Christian claims, like the doctrine of the resurrection, it feels precisely like God is intruding on the order that he established. And how do we respond to those sorts of questions?
Well, I mean, it's not that God is intruding. It's God is bringing it to its next chapter, its completion, right? Which is a new heavens and a new earth that are beyond our imagining. And we see that first in the risen body of Jesus Christ. Right? He is the first fruits of God's ultimate plan for our happiness. God, who created us out of love, did not create us so that our lives would end in sadness and death, right, and farewells. God created us so that he could bring us through this life, through the purification of this life, into the fullness of the resurrection that we see in Jesus. One way to think about it, which Pope Benedict offers in his wonderful trilogy on Jesus of Nazareth, is that, you know, think about it this way. So, in order to love, you need a certain kind of biology, right? To love freely, we need a certain kind of body. Mm. And we have that, and that's one of the final products of evolution. Billions of years of evolution pass before a creature sophisticated enough can actually begin to love in a way that images God, and that's the human person, right? In Jesus' resurrection, in his death, rather, I should say, Jesus valued love more highly even than the biological life that made it possible. And in the resurrection, God says, now love is the foundation of life. Now, in Jesus, right? Love becomes the foundation, and that is an indestructible foundation, unlike biology.
Chris, this makes me think, right, that, you know, we talk about loves that we owe and just love in general, and that, you know, what we want to do is talk about, so to speak, to overdo it, the marriage of science and faith, that in many ways, if we understand creation correctly, then learning about creation can be something more akin to loving creation. And, you know, I it's easy to see, for instance, with, maybe it's not, this shows how much a nerd I am. I look at something like the Large Hadron Collider, and I go, that's out of love, right? Because it's not immediately clear, like the byproducts that we can then go market and sell from the Large Hadron Collider, or even some of these, you know, satellites that we're sending into deep space. You know, when people got those first images from some of the satellites that we've sent off, like the sort of joy that you see on the face of the scientists, you're like, okay, well, that's love, right? They just love learning more. So then you go, well, then weren't you guys the ones talking about, you know, the technocracy and how do we worry about these things? And I think that that's exactly why we need to pinpoint that the problem is not science itself. It's that science itself can be done in two very different ways. Science can be done out of exactly the love of learning just for its own sake. But then there's another sort of science that sees nature itself, as the philosopher Martin Heidegger said, is just a standing reserve, right? Like the world is out there waiting for us to figure out a way to utilize it for our own wants. And this is why it starts to be vital for the common good that we have science and religion have this dialogue. Because when you have science that produces things that can make money or gain power, that's always going to be the temptation, because someone could throw out, like, why spend money? Like, the same person that's like, why build a cathedral? Why spend money rebuilding Notre Dame Cathedral? Can be the same person that says, why have the Large Hadron Collider if it's not immediately making a byproduct? And so, actually, those two things are much more in common than the type of group that sees science or even medicine or any of these things as something that we can use to either gain power or money.
Sure. Well, look, I mean, I would say let's make it bigger. There's two ways of doing science, right? But there's two ways of doing life.
Right.
And I would propose that all of us have to do both kinds of living, right? I mean, I have to make a living. There are people who have to make a living and who do a much better job of it than me, because I'm a theology professor, right? there are people who make lots of money and approach it lightly. There are people who make a little bit of money and approach it in a miserly way. Mm. You know, I mean, an engineer, a person who goes out and kind of does a lot of the, you know, the thing that we're talking about here, making technology possible or something like that, not necessarily doing something contrary to God's will, right?
Of course.
And the people who use it aren't necessarily doing something contrary to God's will. It's the way that we use it. It's kind of like, you know, coming from Louisiana, we put our accents in different places because of our French background, you know. So whenever I hear people talk about St. Bernard, I'm like, no, man, that's St. Bernard.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, I mean, St. Augustine. I mean, that's the way we talk. That's the way we talk down there. Where do you put the accent? Do you put the accent on meaning, love, awe, wonder, right? And you can apply that even to ordinary engineering problems, right? Where do you put it? I mean, what do you want in a doctor, right? In your, in, you know, do you want a doctor who just wants the money, or do you want a doctor who actually loves the practice and loves the way that it serves human beings? That's the situation. So I would not say so much that there's, you know, kind of a good science and a bad science, but I would say that both kinds are necessary, and both of them have to be engaged with wisdom. Mm. Both of them have to be engaged with prudence, and both of them have to be engaged with a transcendent horizon in view, which is the mystery of the human person and ultimately the mystery of God.
So, Chris, as someone who's kind of unexpectedly been thrust into both worlds, are you hopeful about the future of the conversation between faith and reason? I mean, I guess you are if you do this sort of work, but you still hear hard-headed materialists who say faith is an obstacle to solving our most pressing problems like climate change. And then you can certainly get on YouTube and meet Christian speakers and figures who say be wary of modern science because it's ultimately going to undermine our faith or advance those claims that do so.
Yeah, it's never going to undermine our faith. I don't think we should be afraid of questions, and I don't think we should be afraid of new discoveries at all. The Catholic Church and our incredible tradition has shown again and again and again that it's precisely in light of new discoveries that sometimes startle and surprise us that we get a new and deeper hold on what God has revealed to us. Even if it's just being able to distinguish between what we once thought, right, and what we know now, and then reflecting on what we know now. Well, I'm not worried about that at all. I think that one of the problems and one of the reasons young people have kind of, so many young Catholics see a warfare between science and religion is because they feel, especially those who actually attend church and go to Catholic schools, they feel a certain insecurity and anxiety about this on the part of those who are teaching them and forming them. We need to get rid of that. And here I have to give a shout out to the amazing teachers. And Bo, you got to see this yourself when you were here. The amazing teachers who come and engage the programming that we do, Elizabeth Schief included. She was wonderful. She got up there and she was so energetic. You know what I mean? And I was thinking to myself, it's always wonderful to see young teachers because it reminds me of my imminent death.
That's right. I was like, I need to go drink some more coffee to just match the energy. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, with the good work that she's doing in Des Moines and the other people from there who have done this and people from all over the country, they get serious. They create lesson plans as part of our programming, which we're creating a teacher resource sharing website out of, to make that available to their colleagues back at their schools and their administrators. They are the key to the future of this. Catechists, and of course I think priests, obviously, that begin to show a confidence in our faith and not a fear, right? Not falling back on kind of, you know, rigid sort of defenses, but actually a willingness to say, huh, well, now that means I need to rethink this. Never letting go of what God has revealed, never letting go of revealed dogmas, but understanding them in a new way.
Well, Chris, one thing that I have to make it biographical for myself, one of the things that delights me is that this initiative started in New Orleans in the South. As an Oklahoman and a Southerner myself, there's often one of the more pernicious images and stereotypes, right, is how anti-science the entire region is. And it really has always struck me as being patently false, because growing up in Oklahoma, you know, as a Southern Baptist before I converted, I mean, we prayed all spring and summer that God might spare us from twisters, but we also storm chased every single one of them, and they had loads of them in Grant County, Oklahoma. And so this idea that like science and faith were adamantly opposed, I'm like, no, you know, tornadoes were this wonderful metaphor in my life and every kid I knew who grew up in Oklahoma for like the power of God, but also we all know what Hooke echoes and Doppler effect, and we learned all sorts of meteorological terms. Yeah. Precisely because we all have a love-terror relationship with tornadoes. Now, it can seem like I'm sort of being a little bit flippant, but it may be for people who haven't grown up there, it's hard to misunderstand how an entire region can be cast as anti-science, and then it bristles so much against your lived experience. But for me, tornadoes, it was to me obvious that I was always going to go study about this interchange between faith and science, because it just seemed to be a thread throughout my entire life. So I think it's very important, as sometimes people want to like remove that sort of human element, right, the biography of things. I think it's fantastic that it's exactly New Orleans and native Louisiana, where you're from, that this mm-hmm. has taken off, and that God has used the circumstances of your life and your region to make this even more profound.
Yeah, and you know, it's what Bud said earlier about, you know, God is not in competition with his creatures, right? You talked about Calvin and the idea of strict predestination, this terrible idea that if God is doing it, somehow we're not, right? And how Thomas Aquinas gives us a way out of that. It was very interesting to me that it was precisely in St. Thomas Aquinas' thought that the part of it that I didn't spend a lot of time studying because I was writing on other areas, right, that I began to find in some of the very works that I had been drawing on, the Summa Theologiae, the Summa Contra Gentiles, etc., that I found it precisely there. It was like, wow, he's got the answer right here. centuries before this ever became, you know, before this misconception arose. I wanted to share a quote from Thomas Aquinas as we're getting here towards the end.
Fantastic.
This is from his great work, the Summa Contra Gentiles, where he is actually writing kind of a summary of the Catholic faith for those who did not believe. And he says, an effect. He's talking about natural cause and effect. So this goes back to the whole integrity of the natural world and the naturalism we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. An effect is not attributed, he says, to a natural cause and to divine power in such a way that it is partly done by God and partly by the natural agent. Rather, he says, it is wholly done by both.
Mm.
And then he gives another wonderful image, which is part of my shout-out to the teachers. He says, it is a greater perfection for a thing to be good in itself and also the cause of goodness in others. Therefore, God so governs things that he makes some of them to be causes of others. As a teacher, who not only imparts knowledge to his pupils, but also gives them the capacity to teach others. So God is so good that he creates an evolving world precisely so that we can be causes of things. And that shows his wisdom and power in an even greater way than if he just caused it all directly himself. And there's, I think, the key to, whether we be in the South or the North or any other place, the key to addressing the warfare or conflict misconception of science and religion. It's about showing a more amazing, a more beautiful and truer vision of God.
It's a perfect way to end the show. Those are precisely parts of Thomas Aquinas that when I read, it was like scales fell from my eyes for so many questions that I had. And it makes so much sense to bring it up here. So Chris, before we let you go, we really want people to know where they can go find more out about this. So you mentioned a textbook, if you don't mind letting people know that again. And then if there's anywhere else on the internet where they can go find the good work that you're up to.
Sure. The first edition of the text is no longer being printed because the second edition is forthcoming. But that'll be available on Amazon.com and also through the publisher, which is Midwest Theological Forum. It's a textbook for high school, so it should be accessible to most readers. If you want to learn more about the programming that we do, if there are teachers out there who are listening or people who are just interested, you can go to McGrath, that's mcgrath.nd.edu/science.
Yes.
So mcgrath.nd.edu/science. And that's our website.
It's a fantastic website. All the programming that you're doing is fantastic. I'm impressed about how accessible all the programming that you do is, but then also how in-depth it can go. And just to be able to talk with some of the people that were there, it's obvious the huge impact that you are making. So, Chris, thank you for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure. We can't wait to have you back at some point.
Thanks, Bo. Thanks, Bud. And I look forward to it.
God bless. Well, folks, that was our show. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, in our families, our city, our state, the nation, the world, the entire galaxy, the whole kit and caboodle. This is the Uncommon Good. We'll be back next week. But if people want to stay connected to Iowa Catholic Radio through its on-air programming, what are some of the things they should look forward to engaging with?
Deepen your spiritual life by praying the rosary daily at 5:30 a.m. That's followed by the Angelus at 6. And then the rosary is prayed again 9:30 in the morning, 9:30 at night. The a.m. time is dedicated to praying for our country.
Yep, so we have also lots of events happening in and around the diocese and the Iowa area that Iowa Catholic Radio is a part of. I was about to read a past event, Bud, but I caught myself. So too bad that I didn't catch the baseball reference earlier, but I saved myself there. The Man Up West Power Lunch is Friday, July 12th, so this coming Friday noon at St. Francis of Assisi with Monsignor Larry Beeson, who is moderating a discussion with John O'Connor, Paul Connor, and Dave Friesman as they share their stories about why they left the Catholic Church and what brought them back home. So that's a good one to pay attention to. On July 23rd, St. Thomas Aquinas in Indianola, Iowa Catholic will radio will be there for RagBri. I'm not riding a bike. I don't think John Leonetti's riding a bike, but we'll be there. Who? Oh, Straight Talk's broadcasting live from out there. Fantastic.
And Be Not Afraid might also, too.
What now?
And Be Not Afraid might also broadcast live from there, too.
Is it going to be primarily about bikes?
I'm sure. I mean, I don't know, something about jeans, about rubber and road, and I don't know.
Yeah, this is, sounds good to me. We'll be at the Cathedral Concert Series at the Pastoral Center downtown July 26th and 27th. We're going to be at the Iowa State Fair August 8th through 18th. The 5th Annual Man Stag is Wednesday night, September 18th. We're still trying to figure out how to fly Bud down for that one. And then finally, keep in mind, Ut Fidem and Iowa Catholic Radio present The Extraordinary News with Father John Ricardo and the premiere of The Veil Removed. That's Saturday, December 7th. Make sure to go look at all of this stuff on iowacatholicradio.com and to sign up for those events. And if you can and are able, we covet your prayers to support this show and our entire network, but also your donations as well. For Bud Maher, this is Bo Bonner. We'll be back next week.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard every week on wonderful Catholic stations like this one and anytime on podcast. Just search for The Uncommon Good.